and call the meeting to order and apologize for being a little late. We were in caucus. And Commissioner McElroy, why don't you just get up there? And I don't know if Representative Gunther wants to be up there also. And Mr. Speaker, do you want to get up there with them, or is it in the same? Do you want to both get up there, or just go through one at a time? Welcome, Representative Gunther. Moves that House File 3972 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. Here's that in front of us. And Representative Gunther, you have a technical amendment that's being passed out. You might want to explain as you're passing it off.
Yeah, I haven't said it yet.
It's like a few.
Okay, I move the A081358 amendment.
Representative Gunther moves the, let's see, we don't have a quorum yet, though, so I guess we'll just have to talk about it.
We'll talk about it. And Mr. McElroy will explain the amendment.
Do you want me to explain that now, or do you want to do your introductory remarks first?
I move the amendment. We can't move it because there's not a quorum.
We don't have a quorum. We're not. We almost do because members did check in. But go ahead, Commissioner McElroy. Then we can explain the amendment at this time.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Keith Bogus from the Department of Finance to explain it. It is fairly technical and adjusting budget vote.
Okay.
Mr.
Bogus.
Mr. Chairman, welcome. For the record, my name is Keith Boga. I'm an executive budget officer with the Department of Finance. And if I could just walk through this amendment, we're making primarily technical changes. If you see on line one, we're just changing the total general fund number to the amount after the amendments below. The same is true with page one, line 27, which is changing the totals at the bottom of the bill. On page three, on line 21, we're deleting the word telephone access Minnesota. That was an error that was referring to the wrong program, and it should be the telephone assistance plan. On page 3, lines 26 and 29, we're correcting the total for the Employment and Economic Development Agency. And the biggest change in this amendment is on line 1.8. We are adding $1 million appropriation in the second year for the Veterans Business Assistance Program, which is a new program, and there's language in the back of the bill, I think in Article 4, and we just omitted this appropriation language in the original draft of the bill. On page 8, line 33, we have another amendment. We're making a correction to the labor and industry reduction. That number in the bill now is 41,000 and should have been 43,000. And the remaining changes starting on the amendment page 1, line 16, all refer to the veterans program in the back of the bill on page 37.
The question that Representative Gunther raised, Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dan McElroy, the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The proposal for a veterans program was originally in a bill that went to the Veterans Committee. The Veterans Committee asked, because it was job training, that it be considered here. And so this is coming to you a little later than we normally would have liked, but it was, as I understand it, at the request of the Veterans Committee, that it be considered in your omnibus bill rather than in theirs, Mr. Chairman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The changes that are being made in this amendment are technical changes, removing some redundant language and expanding the program
to all veterans in the Iraq or Afghanistan theaters. And I think if there are any more questions on that, Steve Nelson can see them.
Okay, thank you. I understand there's a separate bill on this veterans program too that's coming to this committee, but we'll just hear the, we just heard the proposal today. Okay, any questions on the amendment? If not, then go ahead, Mr. McElroy, and you can start with your portion of the bill.
Mr. Chairman and members, we're dealing with House File 3972, and with the portion that applies to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, begins on page 3, line 24. And in discussions with your staff, Mr. Chairman, they asked us to be very brief about the appropriation for the FEED initiative and to spend most of our time on the revenue-raising portions of the bill, a cancellation, and some transfers. Is that the correct, Mr.
Chairman? Fine.
All right. The bill appropriates $10.9 million for the FEED initiative, consisting of 14 line items that are found on in Subdivision 2, page 4, line 4, through page 7, line 22. Of those 14 programs, 4 are entirely new, 4 are refunding programs that haven't been funded for a very long time, such as the Minnesota Initiative Foundation or the Minnesota Investment Fund. And 6 are additional funds for programs that are currently funded, but these will be funded at increased levels, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to answer questions about any of those programs, but I think I'll start, if I may, on page 7, line 23, under Workforce Development, the first item in the bill that is a budget reduction. And I will go through it in some detail, but there are additional members of our staff, John Sherman and others, who can provide more detail if you have questions. The first item, a reduction of $280,000, is from the Extended Employment Program, and it is in two parts. To make clear, this is a reduction of $280,000 in a program that's funded at $12.5 million per year. It's in two parts. $155,000 is reduced resources in 2009. The balance of this is a fee-for-service program. And there are a number of vendors who have not used as many hours of employment support as we had anticipated, but we are reducing the funding in 2009 to reflect the hours that will actually be used in 2008. The second part of the reduction is $125,000 from a program referred to as the Wage Incentive Program, which was a separate appropriation for a new idea. You received a report on this several weeks ago that John Sherman authored, and it's our judgment, although it's a good idea and there's some vendors to benefit, it is not as important as some of the other parts of the program. And so this appropriation would reduce the total funding from $12,535,000 to approximately $12,275,000 as part of the governor's budget. The next item on page 8, bottom of page 7, are two...
Excuse me, just for a second, Commissioner. Representative Sanchez had moved the AO81358 amendment. No questions? Representative Deborah, did you have a question on the amendment?
No.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Then Representative Gunter moves that House File number 3972 as amended be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education and Workforce Development Omnibus Bill. Commissioner, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, did you want to take Representative Detmer's question?
Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chairman, can I, there's a question on Article 4, or should we wait?
No, go ahead. You've got a question.
Okay, on Article 4.
What page are you on?
Page 37. Starting on line 37.15. the second sentence there, all repayments of a loan made under this section, including principal and interest. I thought this was an interest-free loan. Now, shouldn't we strike the word interest?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, we believe that that was struck in the amendment. Representative Detmer is correct that these military reservists, economic entry loans, are to be, and if I could, we're going to find out where it is in the amendment.
On
1.17 of the amendment,
yeah,
they start 7916. So, Representative Detmer, you're correct that it was taken care of.
I just didn't read the amendment. Thank you.
I have a lot to read. All right. If I can go back to the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The next item are two cancellations of appropriations from the prior session. The first one is $608,000 from an appropriation for the Foreign Trade Zone Authority. A study was done as part of that appropriation to determine the Foreign Trade Zone building was not feasible. And we have met with the Foreign Trade Zone Authority and the various interest groups, and they acknowledged that this project wasn't feasible. And so the balance of the appropriation, $608,000, could cancel back to the general fund.
Mr. Chair. Okay. Commissioner McRae, just to keep, because this is such a large bill and so many lines, and could you, when you're talking where you're making the cancellations, could you reference the line, page and line number for us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, of course. The first one is on page 7, line 33, through page 8, line 4. And the amount, I need to give you the amount because they're all added together into that $1,758,000. The amount for that one is $608,000. The next cancellation is on page 8, line 5, and it says an appropriation made in laws of 2005 for the methamphetamine laboratory cleanup fund. Since the meth bill was passed, I believe in 2006, that put tight restrictions on the sale of ephedrine and pseudoephedrine, we're no longer getting any requests for this money. So we have not had a request in some time, and we recommend that the balance, $150,000, cancel back to the general fund. The third change here is on page 8, lines 10 through 12, and it's $1 million reduction in the appropriation on a one-time basis only, not an ongoing change, but a one-time reduction for the Job Skills Partnership. Job Skills Partnership is appropriated $6.5 million a year from the general fund. They carried $3.9 million into fiscal year 08, and this $1 million will allow us to continue with the program as scheduled, even if the program is reduced by this amount. The next reduction is page 8, line 17. And it's an $8 million one-time transfer from the Workforce Development Fund. There is a exhibit that was passed out that is headlined at the top, Workforce Development Fund, as of February 29, 2008. And it shows the status of the fund both for fiscal year, for budget fiscal year 2008 and for fiscal year 2009, and shows that after the transfer, one-time transfer of $8 million, there would be $8.7 million remaining. We would be uncomfortable if this was an ongoing transfer, but on a one-time basis, the program can continue to offer services after that transfer is made. There is also, Mr. Chairman, on line 8, or page 8, line 19, a change or a cancellation of $2 million from the 21st Century Fund. There is a color exhibit for the 21st Century Mineral Fund. It currently has a balance of $40.35 million. It has obligations and commitments to projects for $37,150,000. It has an uncommitted balance of $3.2 million. And after this proposed transfer, we'll have a balance of $1.2 million. That's the balance of the budget items for the Department of Employment and Economic Development. There is, however, a repealer that we think needs some explanation. That's on page 25 of the bill. Page 25, line 19. Repeals the laws of 2004, Chapter 188, Section 2, and it involves the Centers for Independent Living. The language is reprinted at the back of the bill. This was a transfer between funds to satisfy federal requirements that the federal government told us we couldn't do. The transfer envisioned in that language was never done. The language is now archaic, and it does not have a budget impact. But it is important, we believe. We've discussed this with the Centers for Independent Living, and they're in agreement that this language should be repealed. Mr. Chair.
Okay. Question, Commissioner. Commissioner, you know, as I look at this amendment, you've got quite a few new programs going in, and we've got about, well, almost 12 million cuts. But do you cut yourself at all anywhere in this bill?
The only cut, there is not an administrative cut in the bill for the department.
So you just cut everybody else that you pass money through, you're cutting them, but you're not cutting yourself.
The only, Mr. Chairman, the only cut is to extended employment, and it's relatively small. The rationale for not cutting general administration is that we're taking on new responsibilities with the deed or with the feed initiative for which we did not ask for administrative bonds. And that in a time when job of creation is so important, and when unemployment is relatively high, it's the judgment of the administration that we should preserve resources to take care of people who need help with jobs. But the governor is not recommending a general administrative to the department.
Well, you know, given the fact that he's recommending $25 million cuts to both Minsky and another $25 million cuts to the University of Minnesota, I find it a little difficult to see money going into your agency and then really you don't take a cut at all.
The only, Mr. Chair, that's correct. And it's a matter of priorities in a time when economic stimulus, in our judgment, is appropriate. We certainly understand the concern. Just to provide you with the numbers, our administrative budget or full operating budget is about $13.4 million. And so a 3% cut is approximately $390,000. A 4% cut is about $500,000. If that's included in the budget, it will mean it will have some impact if we can manage to it. It would, however, reduce the resources we have to help people in a wide variety of ways. But that's true of a lot of cuts, and we certainly understand the concern.
Now, you know, it's difficult for us, and sometimes when we have a little more time, it might be good for the committee to look at the other billions of dollars that you have in your agency that is a general fund money. But, you know, it's a little difficult to do this at this time given the fact of where we are in the legislative session. Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, members, you have to remember that this division that you now chair was cut substantially the last 2 years, 3 years before you took over, and there was some substantial administrative cuts done at that time. And it was a very painful thing to watch all the things that happened. We're very happy that most of the people that were involved in this were laid off through attrition. But it was still, they were never replaced in the administration or in the department.
Representative Gunther, that's very true. And at the same time, when Representative Nornes chaired the other part of what's now this division, I believe there were $380 million in cuts to Minsky and the university, and there were a lot of layoffs and also a lot of tuition hikes, the highest tuition hikes in the country, in fact. So, you know, again, we're in this situation, I think, because of no new tax pledges that haven't helped or probably have exacerbated the problem. Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was a little concerned when I looked on page 9 and I thought your committee budget had been cut on line 9.22. And I realize it isn't your committee budget, but it is something that we've talked about, and that is the Boxing Commission. We had a hearing here a couple years ago. Last year we talked about it, and I hear the year before that when I wasn't a part of the legislature, that it was a one-time expenditure, and last year we were approached again for a one-time expenditure, and now I see that we have, even though it's a very small amount of money, philosophically at a time when the state is looking at budget cuts to our poor and budget cuts to our students and budget cuts to families, that we would be adding something for the Boxing Commission is concerning to me, and while it's more philosophical than an actual huge dent in our budget, I thought it was worth mentioning, and I guess I'm curious to know why, after the one-year promise and then the two-year, one-year promise, why we're putting it in the base.
Representative Gunther has his own individual bill on this, too, and we had a subcommittee meeting chaired by Representative Mahoney on this, and Representative Gunther. And so, Representative Gunther, do you want to take that one on?
I'm delighted to. When we had the Board of Boxing, it only dealt with 5 to 7 venues or fight cards per year. Now that we have included 6 other combative sports, we have many, many more venues than we had before. What we are doing now is, because we have these many venues, we will collect more. For a fighter to fight, he has to pay a portion of money. For a fight card to happen, there's a cost to that. And basically, we're hoping that these will somewhat collect more of it, but we had to increase it from $50,000 to $80,000 to be sure that we can collect enough money. And we are now limiting it to 2 commissioners per fight instead of 5, and we're conserving there also. So I think in total, I hope that this is the last time I have to see this.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
To that end, my colleague, President Gunther, explained it fairly well, but the bigger issue for me is that we have a significant, and primarily young men, going into a boxing ring with a 4-ounce glove versus a 16-ounce glove, they can do a tremendous amount of damage. And if we, and there are a good number of reputable promoters. This $80,000 is really focused to make sure that the not reputable promoters don't put a 300-pound guy in the ring against a 100-pound guy, because that has been known to happen. In less reputable promoters, and as Representative Gunther said, this should be a self-funding after this year. We need to make sure that something doesn't happen, and I know it's a problem, but just so my colleague across the aisle understands, I have about 40 pages of baseline budget for maybe it's only 30 of deed, and I've got just a few less for Dolly. And you know, I was planning on putting a toilet in this weekend, but I guess that's been changed. And we'll have more information for Monday.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate those responses. And I don't want young men getting beat up either, but, you know, I can put the boxing gloves on if I need to. And I think when we're making cuts, I have some at home, thank you. If we have to make cuts to families and education, you know, it's all priorities, and this to me does not, particularly after 2 years of promises, does not rise to the level of a priority. So, thank you.
Some doctor.
You don't show any sign of putting those gloves on, by the way, but we got to remember that the state of Minnesota does have an obligation to make sure that these fights are fair and are safe. And we gave that obligation for a short period of time to Iowa. We found out very quickly that didn't work. So now we have to take that responsibility again, and we've expanded it considerably, and hopefully the combination of more fighting venues and things like this will get them close to the being able to be self-sustaining.
Okay, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate this opportunity, and I think I appreciate the commissioner coming here. Really, you know, we didn't have a tremendous amount of time to kind of look at the budget, and it certainly does have dollars in it, and we need to look at these two agencies versus the higher ed agency. I mean, we both made a commitment. I think the whole committee has made a commitment to find ways to not encumber the university, secondary education with these cuts. So, Commissioner McElroy, I know that your department, your division, has more than its share of employees with an abundance of jobs in their portfolio. I have seen, I've been on this committee 10 years now, almost 10 years now, and I've seen people in this department go from having one focus on their job to having four and five focuses in their job. And sad to say, when you start doing that, it starts calling into question their ability to do it. But you have a $150 million agency budget that is spread out over everything from salaries to computers to travel to grants to everything else, and we need to take a look at it, and I hopefully we'll be able to remain friends even when I come back with some proposals that I think will be very painful. But I assure you that I'm going to cut you a lot more than I'm going to cut higher ed if I can.
Representative Haas.
Thank you. I think it's been covered, so I pass you.
Okay. Before we leave, Representative Mr. McElroy, I just do want to say that and Speaker Twiggum, too, was here then on the 21st Century Minerals Fund. You know, the governor had said that if there were projects, we'd get the money back, and there are a number of projects going on, and I have my own ideas how to use $2 million that you're canceling. But just for the committee's sake, and you've all heard me talk about the school trust, both the Permanent University Fund and the Permanent School Fund, and you see, I don't know if we all got the handout on the 21st century, but the Fresconia Minerals Corporation, the DNR, has been handing out, I think, to the Education Committee. I know they were in my office last week. And there's a lot of exploratory drilling going on for copper, nickel, gold, zinc, platinum, palladium, titanium. Well, titanium is a mixture. But anyhow, all those different precious metals, and they've found some unbelievable seams of ore up there, and most of them are on our school trust lands, whether the university or K-12 funds. And this 750, as an example, I believe was matched with some IRRB funding, and I think that money's just about all been spent. But as they went down and they drilled wedges off from their previous holes, they found places where there's 15-foot seams of, you know, for those of you that remember Shop's class and that brass hammer you got, you know, they look like that. That's how pure they are. So I would think that we would be short-sighted of us to, you know, take that money at this time. But, Commissioner, I think we're going to look a little deeper into this because, you know, really, what's happening in your division is cuts to some of the needy organizations that pass through. And then just finally an ending on the workforce development dollars, and you had sent me that letter last week, and it looks like you covered all of that, but do you expect any other leftover dollars or dollars that could be captured out of that fund before the end of this biennium?
Mr. Chairman, the Job Skills Partnership, as I indicated in my letter, authorized a transfer in 2007 of $7.9 million from the Workforce Development Fund to fund Job Skills Partnership program.
The law provides that in each year after March 1st, they can make a recommendation, that they can make transfers. We're not intending to recommend a transfer in 2008.
Is there any money left over in that transfer account?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. There's, of the $7.9 million that was transferred last year, $6.4 million has not yet been expended and is shown in the balance in the workforce development fund.
So that's included in the $8 million?
That's correct.
Okay. And so that's one-time money?
That's correct.
And is there any more questions on this, on the Commissioner McElroy's part of the proposal? I'm sorry.
Can I just ask a question? I think this is Commissioner McElroy. It looks like the MHSA's housing bonds are in this bill. Nonprofit housing bonds authorization standing appropriation. Page 14 and 15, we have it in a section of the bond.
Representative Clark, can I just interrupt you? What we have in front of us is I believe, Representative Gunster, the entire governor's full proposal for the budget, supplemental budget, so I'm sure that you're going to see your section. We're just going to talk about our section.
Oh, I see.
Here
I, okay. Then I do have one question about this.
Okay.
And I'm sorry if I missed your presentation on that, but you're taking half of it, it looks like, right? With the half of the, what's projected to be at the end of your balance, is that right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, taking half of what? I couldn't quite hear you.
It says projected end of year balance and it's $16 million and you're taking $8 million of it and transferring it to the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, the Workforce Development Fund, yes. But Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, that's correct.
And my question is, you know, it seems like we've been hearing a lot of proposed losses of jobs and this morning today. Are you thinking that this will take care of what's coming down the line with all the layoffs and so on that are being suggested?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, we believe that we can get the amount of funds here allows us to operate the dislocated worker program at current levels and provides additional resources so that if we needed to do more on dislocated workers, we'd have about $8 million with which to do that. So we think that we've provided some safety. If the number of people who are dislocated and request service increases, we can provide those services.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Does this cut back in any of the services that will be available? I mean, there was a time, and I think you were sort of new to the legislature when that first happened, where we actually let people go to school and really get good training. They could go for 2 years, up to 2 years, and actually... and that's been cut way, 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 way back from what I recall. Now, I think if you can go part of a year, you're lucky. So I'm trying to understand, is this what seems to be on the bottom line left that you're saying might be some sort of surplus? Is this continuing at the same level that we have now? Is it cut back anything existing, as I mentioned, cut back from previously, but...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, I think some of the changes you're referring to are in the Minnesota Family Investment Fund and the welfare. No? I'm not aware of any programs. We're not proposing any program changes in the dislocated workers program from current levels. We're simply transferring that $8 million. We're not making any policy changes. And it's a one-time transfer.
Okay, and one final question, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of the money from the Workforce Development Fund that goes to a number of different programs. I'm thinking in the last session we put some into a couple of different youth programs and so on. Does that continue or is that jeopardized by any of those?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there's no changes in the direct appropriation.
So, Mr. Commissioner, all the obligations that we've had for a number of programs that were in the Workforce Development Fund are sacred. You've held them harmless.
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
And, Commissioners, just to refresh, if this fund were to go below a point where it would put anything in jeopardy or if some money was needed, you have the ability, if I'm not mistaken, to increase the...
Let me check the staff. I know that was proposed. I'm not sure that became law.
That's the day in the bill?
You're correct, Mr. Chairman.
So if you pull out too much, you get to raise taxes, huh?
Mr. Chairman... We'll try to keep from going out too much.
Okay. Anyone from the audience want to speak for this proposal or against it. Welcome to the committee. Thanks, Commissioner McElroy.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Ann Olson, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Workforce Council Association. So we represent the local service providers of adult dissociated worker and youth programs in the workforce centers across the state, and also the boards that oversee those programs. And I appreciate the fact that the committee has a difficult task ahead of them, but right now, as we speak, there are people upstairs, advocates, testifying against taking funds out of the Health Care Access Fund and out of the TANF funds, and I think it's important that we just draw attention to the points that have been made here already, that taking money out of the dislocated worker fund is doing the same thing. You know, the point has already been made about what the programs that fund supports, and we acknowledge that there is a surplus in the fund, but we'd like to keep the committee to keep in mind that it's a counter-cyclical fund. When the amount of money goes in, or when the economy is on a downturn, the amount of money going into the fund lessens and the need for services increases. So rather than looking at this as disposable income, we should be really looking at it as a savings account instead. Secondly, this fund has historically been met with some opposition from advocates of the business community, as you well know. And while we believe that most employers are willing to invest in a safety net program that helps their employees if they are laid off, we believe that transferring these funds could jeopardize that as well, and so we'd encourage you to think about that as well. And finally, while maintaining a reserve of $8 million seems to be reasonable, what remains would not provide much cushion. Depending on which services are accessed by job seekers, the cost per dislocated worker participant can range from $2,000 to $4,000. So if you do the math, if the transfer is made and $8 million remain, that only gives a cushion for about 3,000 workers who may be laid off before the remaining funds would be depleted. And in fact, several workforce service areas have already had to go back this year to ask for additional funds for job seeker programs because they've been depleting their funds more quickly than they had anticipated. So we just have some concerns that this money could be depleted really quickly. And in addition to people who are enrolled programs, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that the workforce centers have been seeing more people come in just for general services, universal customers. We refer to them who aren't enrolled in any specific program. There's just resources for those services have never really kept up with demand, I don't think. But some of the UI processing claims and a shift in focus to serving employers as well has put some additional stresses on the system. And our association just would continue to work with you and advocate strongly that resources for those programs to assist anyone who comes in, whether they qualify for a specific program or not, receive the assistance that they need in finding or keeping or improving their employment opportunities. And so, again, we understand the difficult position that you're in, but we do have concerns that this fund is being depleted while the governor is advocating for increases in some other programs. And we're also concerned that if any programs are funded on an ongoing basis from this fund, that will affect resources in the future. So understanding that you do need to prioritize in time for shortfalls, we just encourage you to keep these points in mind so you have to divert funds from the workforce development fund and that they be used for one-time allocations or for resources for job seekers as they're originally intended.
Questions for Mr. Olson? Okay, thank you very much, Representative Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this fund is replenished four times a year, and the major amount of money that we get is in the summer, early summer period, and where we're taking money away, that amount should be replenished very quickly. However, as Ms. Olson referenced, there is going to be an ongoing increase in seeking funds for training in the future unless we have a turnaround in our economy. So we will have to address that with the rate change with the commissioner as we go on.
Thank you again. Representative Clark.
I have a question for the commissioner. I was just looking at the community leadership and planning program. Can you tell me a little bit about where that came from or what that is?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, could you repeat the question, please?
Sure. I was looking at the Community Leadership and Planning Program. Can you just tell me a little bit more? Well, the appropriation is on page 6, but the language was on another page.
I can. It's part of the, Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, it's part of the Governor's State Initiative. It is targeted to rural opportunity counties in greater Minnesota. It is to provide essentially scholarship resources, a 50% matching grant, to work with organizations like the Blandon Foundation, the Northwest Area Foundation, the Knight Family Foundation, and the Ignite Initiative Foundation, to assist communities with leadership training and with longer-term kind of comprehensive community success plans. Some of this work has taken place, but there have been insufficient resources for it. If we traveled around the state and listened to communities, many communities want to be can engage their citizens in long-term planning. Some cities have done a great deal already. Others have not done very much. There's a request for a $500,000 appropriation, which would be matched by $500,000 in non-state funds on a city-by-city basis.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner and Mr. Speaker Wiggum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I appreciate the chance to come before you for the first time and respond to some questions you might have about DLI's budget. I did have the enjoyment of watching your committee yesterday afternoon in the background in my room while I was doing a few other things, and I don't know if Chairman Rukavina has reported to you yet or not, but we did have a meeting with the governor earlier this morning, but in fact we had to beg for our breakfast. to get any eggs at all, we had to beg, right, Mr. Rukavina?
We had to beg. I guess they're on a tight budget over there.
Must be very.
He gave us muffins, and I brought Junkie with me for protection.
Without butter.
Yes. So we said, come on, don't be... I said, otherwise I'm going to stand up on the floor and tell them how cheap you are. So pretty soon we got some blueberries and strawberries and then a little bit of scrambled eggs, and that was it.
Lucky guy. Anyway, thank you for having me here. Members, our department at DLI has very, very little general fund money, as shown by the very small line that is in the bill before you right here. Turning to page 8 and 9, I believe it is, 8 and 9, bottom page 8, top page 9, we have in this bill a reduction of, now with the amendment, $43,000 to the Department of Labor and Industry. Members, the Department of Labor and Industry only gets general fund money for our labor standards unit. It's the only general fund money we do obtain. All the rest of our monies at the DLI to run workers' compensation units, to run OSHA, to run all the codes and run the 110,000 licenses that we issue, professional licenses of the plumbers, pipe fitters, electricians at the department, are all either a fee or a premium or federal money. Federal monies, premiums, and fees that are dedicated. Our labor standards unit does get about $1 million. Therefore, the 4% reduction before you is the $43,000 approximately in the bill. Members, very honestly, last year, this legislature and governor saw fit to increase the 2DLI a number of positions, three to be exact, $300,000 basically for our labor standards unit to help in the enforcement and education of the prevailing wage, which we have done. We hired those individuals, I think, approximately about September of this year. We hired the individuals. We did do a lot of outreach, probably about 8 outstate meetings in relationship to the laws and definitions and the application of prevailing wage. The $43,000 cut before us would probably mean, members, in all honesty, that we will probably have to retrench a bit from the three positions that you gave us last year. We would probably look at doing that through attrition. We do have an individual in our department in labor standards that will probably be retiring, we've heard, within a shorter period of time. So we will be able to handle this reduction, not by laying off any individuals, but through an attrition program within our department. Mr. Chairman, I don't know what else you would want me to say about the $43,000, but I'm certainly willing to stand subject to any questions that you may have.
Well, Commissioner, again, you know, your general fund appropriation, because of what happened, you know, after 2002, is not that extensive, but you have a huge department and a lot of money. And you have, you know, when we had the last severe budget crunch with the $4.5 billion deficit, I recall you took about $265 million from the special comp fund and balanced the budget with it. Now, I know you don't have that type of money left anymore. In fact, you know, you were the speaker, and Representative Gunter was the chair of that committee, and there was that assigned risk special comp fund, and you transferred the money out prior to the budget crunch and put it all in the special comp fund, and then you took $265 million, if I'm not mistaken, out of that and put it into balancing the budget. You also took, when Representative Mahoney probably remembers this, I think it was about $4 million from the electrical, $9 million from the Board of Electricity and pay the budget. So do you have any types of dollars like that, Commissioner, that you can look at without having to go line, without having Representative Mahoney not put his toilet in this week? Do you have an outhouse, by the way, or what's the scoop there? But anyway.
Mr. Chair, I'm not from the Iron Range.
Listen, I'm proud of the fact that I have a two-holer, too. So, but in any event, so he can do his plumbing work this weekend. Is there anything you can think of or suggest to us where there may be some other dollars to look at for, at least if not ongoing, one-time balancing during this fiscal year?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, I need to find out with Representative Mahoney. In the two-holder you have, Representative Rukavina, is there a waterless urinal there? Or
I'm not very smart. My problem is I made it a double-decker. But anyway, but the working guy's on top, and my
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. That is
Andy doesn't understand.
Mr. Welty is far too young.
Yes,
too young to understand that the comment about the water student was just for Representative Mahoney and myself. Yeah. I think we have a little issue to deal with.
We have an ongoing discussion.
Having said that, Mr. Chairman, let me tell you that with the dedication of the fees and the dedication of the premiums and the dedication of the federal dollars, which covers licenses, the licensing, the premiums would be workers' compensation, and the federal dollars would be OSHA. Those dollars are dedicated, and they're to be in that area. And obviously, we make an assessment from workers' compensation for the special compensation fund. That assessment is made to all employers in the state of Minnesota. And if it's used for some other purpose other than workers' compensation, that's not directly related to the premium that would be paid for the workers' compensation unit itself, for the system. I guess to answer your question, we don't have funds sitting aside that are non-dedicated, Mr. Chairman, that are there to be able to be used and accessed for other purposes.
Well, Commissioner, we'll have to look, because I think for your, you know, and workers' comp, there is, you know, you always carry somewhat of a balance for administrative purposes. I know the administrative law judges, or whatever they're called, and the workers' comp judges are in there, and along with administrative fees for your department. And I do think we have the authority as the legislature to look at that. We do set those, I mean, we can look at those dollars as you did when you were in charge here. So, you know, if you could think of anything and talk to members and you know, assistant commissioners or whomever you have to talk to, maybe you can find some dollars. And I would ask the same of former Representative Commissioner McElroy, if he's still in the room, too. So any questions of Commissioner Twiggum? Is there anybody in the audience that wants to speak on this? Mr. Anfang. welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Dick Ansang. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. And in my capacity with the building trades, we work very closely with the Department of Labor and Industry, especially through the Workers' Comp Division and the Apprenticeship Division and the Wage and Hour Division. We're very proud to have about 11,000 apprentices registered in your department, and the work that you do is very commendable. And keeping the apprentices in the state of Minnesota as being some of the highest, most highly recognized as trained people in the United States in the construction industry. One of the things that helped us get there was the other laws that exist in the state of Minnesota, one of them being the prevailing rate law. And for those of you that have been around a while, the law has been around for quite a while. But just recently, and the commissioner just mentioned that the real enforcement of that law has been transferred to the Department of Labor and Industry. And it was not without a lot of work and effort and that went into getting those three positions that the commissioner mentioned funded last year in the legislature, and they've done a wonderful job in hiring people and training people. And we're just now getting to the point where, at least where I believe the knowledge that I have, where they're becoming active in their ability to see what's really going on out there and enforcement of prevailing wages. And I would just like to encourage all of you, commissioner and everybody here, this enforcement is very, very important for the industry, for the contractors, and for the potential workers in the construction industry doing public work. And I just hate to see the efforts, the good efforts that are being made in terms of incorporating this new enforcement within the department be diminished in any way at such an early stage in our ability to determine its success or failure. I believe that early proper enforcement of prevailing rates will provide a detriment to those that would choose not to pay it and have to be complained upon. And so to not put forward as much effort as we could now would not serve the state the way it's, we believe it's intended to. And that actually, in the appropriations last year, we were quite actually conservative. We were happy. We knew it was tough times. We were happy to get the three. Others, MnDOT has like 13 or 14. And we would have liked to have seen that kind of number, but we knew it couldn't happen. But we would be disappointed if it got reduced at any from where it is today. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, questions, Mr. Anthony? Not then, Reverend Mahoney.
It's the question for the chair, so I'll wait for the commissioner.
Commissioner, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have breakfast with you this morning and to have you in front of the committee.
Thank you, committee.
Representative Breinert.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead. And while Representative Breinert is going up for House File 3903, we'll entertain your question, but we'll do the minutes first. Representative Mahoney moves the minutes of the March 11th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections? Not all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Minutes adopted. And Representative McFarland moves the minutes of the March 12th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to that? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, in light of the budget problems that we're having and the governor bringing forth his seed initiative, and, you know, the commissioner was here, and I probably could have asked, I will ask him when he comes back, because the commissioner will have to come back to present the seed initiative, but are we going to be looking at this seed initiative, which is about $10 million, and will we have separate hearings on that, or is that, I have some concerns spending that kind of money when we're cutting other things that...
I'll be perfectly frank with you, Representative Mahoney. There were some parts of the seed proposal and actually the new initiatives that deed that I lukewarmly support, given the fact that we've been asked to cut so much from higher education in this division. And so I'm not opposed to them. They will be discussed as we put the bill together after the Easter break. By the way, we have to get our committee, our bill out on the 26th, Mr. Feldman. We have to have it in on the 20th, moved out of here and into Representative Murphy's committee. And do we need a date to do that as a floor maneuver? We don't. Okay, so we can do that on the 26th then. We will discuss all of the initiatives. I'm sure that Representative Gunther is going to want to discuss his bill. And I'm sure that Representative Severson is going to want to discuss the veterans part of the seed proposal. And I'm sure that you're going to want to discuss the bill you had here for the small technology folks. So we will look at all of those. And perhaps some of them will pass and some won't. But the bulk of the $10 million approximately in new programs, I do not expect that there will be enough votes for, given the fact that we are going to have to cut, and we're going to have to cut higher education. And it's sad, but you know, we'll have to look at ways where we don't cut, where those cuts don't go deep enough that the students again are going to be the ones that have to pay for them. So, you know, are we going to approve $1 million in new initiatives? Are we going to, you know, whatever? But I mean, we just heard basically the seed proposals today. We heard them, we heard earlier we had a proposal on them, so we've heard them, and now everybody kind of knows what they are, and we're all going to have to decide what we want to do when we're putting the bill together. So with that, Representative Briner, welcome. Representative Briner moves House Clause 3903 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. House File 3903 is regarding an appropriation for extended employment, and given the governor's budget proposal that you just heard, it might be appropriately subtitled The Best Defense is an Offense. Extended employment is over 40 years old and is a program unique to Minnesota. Almost every service provider for extended employment belongs to an organization called NACRO, which is the Minnesota Association of Community Rehabilitation Organizations. With me today is Bill Harris, who is the director of the Winona ORC, an extended employment provider. And before you hear from Mr. Harris, I'd like to just say a few words about extended employment. And most of you would have received in your mail recently extensive literature on the extended employment program and what its role is in our state. So most of you are well aware of the program. Extended employment provides services for those with severe disabilities. Approximately 6,000 people are served throughout the state, with the providers receiving state money only when clients are working. Extended employment is a pay-for-performance program. The diagram in front of you shows that extended employment providers link those with severe disability to jobs. The providers talk with employers to learn what jobs are available and what skills people need to perform them. They help those with disabilities prepare to succeed on the job. They transport them to the workplace, provide support on the job as necessary, and communicate with the employer and the employee to keep things positive. The state reimburses the extended employment provider based on the hours worked by the individuals served in the extended employment program. The participants are paid for their work by the employer, not the state. The worker in the job pays taxes back to the state and has their own paycheck to show for their participation in the workforce. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Harris and let him give you a direct testimony about the program.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Harris. And I guess, you know, I mean, time is short here, but Mr. Harris, you saw that in the proposal from the commissioner that I think he's nicking this exact fund. So maybe you want to comment on that and also on the need here, because he's saying there isn't a need and you're saying there is.
Mr. Chair, I do address that in my comments.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Reinert, for your continued support of extended employment and your willingness to carry House File 3903. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for the opportunity to speak with you briefly this afternoon. As Representative Reinert said, I'm with Winona ORC in Winona. I am on the Macro Board of Directors and serve as the chair of our Government Relations Committee. The first thing I'd like to stress to you is that extended employment is a jobs program. Extended employment helps Minnesotans get employment, keep employment, and advance in employment. It's increasingly critical that all persons who are able to work be involved in an employment situation. We are seeing more and more persons with mental health issues in extended employment, and there's clinical proof that persons with mental health difficulties are better able to recover when they are involved in meaningful employment. We are also seeing more and more young people with special needs coming out of mainstream high school programs who are looking forward to entering the world of work, and as they transition from high school, many are entering extended employment programs and are expecting to work in fully integrated settings. They need the long-term support that we provide in order to get keep in advance in employment. The second thing I'd like to stress to you is that we strongly oppose the governor's proposed reduction of $155,000 in EE grants. The reason that those dollars were identified as underutilized is that a major organization providing EE services lost significant business contracts, and the money that had been budgeted to go to them upon fulfillment of their EE services has not been utilized. That money should now shift to other EE providers who are serving the persons with disabilities who have shifted to other providers or are serving people beyond the volume at which they're contracted with the state. Each year, each fiscal year, my facility, as other EE programs, gets a specific dollar allocation based on last year's level of service and the dollars that are available. If I do not produce that level, I do not get paid, and the money is shifted to a program that is producing more. There is always overproduction in the system because of high demand for our services. Most providers have extensive waiting lists. There is more demand than the need they can deliver. More demand and need than they can deliver. In addition to the diagram that Representative Greiner shared with you depicting how EE works, you have in front of you two sheets, one that has an arrow on it and the other one which is a chart. The one with the arrow shows the three types of employment services we provide to EE participants: site-based, community, and supported employment. Supported employment is the most independent experience for the participant and is the most highly reimbursed from the state to the providers. The box at the lower right shows a scenario where four providers are meeting or exceeding their contracts with the state to provide EE services. The fourth bar, the red one, shows a situation where the provider is not meeting the contract and will not earn the reimbursed money from the state. That is the case with the $155,000 that we're talking about. On the next sheet, we're trying to show you what would normally occur with monies that are not distributed as contracted. If a provider falls short of the number of job placements they're set as a goal or allocation for whatever reason, the money is then distributed amongst the providers who have exceeded their goals to help offset costs they incurred in serving more individuals with severe disabilities. In the case of the $155,000, we believe the money from the major provider that did not fulfill their contracted hours should have shifted according to the existing redistribution process, that it should not be taken out of the system altogether. And lastly, I would ask you that you strongly consider adding funding to an extended employment grant. It is a jobs program. The employment downturn has resulted in an increase of people who qualify for these important supported employment services. When the economy was more robust, they may have been able to stay employed, become employed, or stay employed, but now that layoffs are occurring it will be very difficult for some of these people to return to work without support. There is currently much larger than $155,000 shortfall in the system. The opportunity to provide services with that money will be eliminated if those dollars are cut. And we would like you to add money so that we can serve more people who otherwise remain on the unemployment rolls.
Okay, well, Mr. Harris, thank you, and we certainly will be considering that program, because I know of the one employer you referenced, and I know that's why one of the reasons why some of that money wasn't used up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I would just say, if you have any particular questions, I would certainly be willing to dialogue with you about the current state of the program.
Thank you. Then Representative Feinert renews her motion that House Bill 3903 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Hartman moves House Bill 3752 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the Higher Education and Workforce Development Bill. Representative Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As my testifiers make their way to the table, I'm going to briefly describe the bill. Mr. Chair, this bill would require that educational materials be provided in an accessible format for students in higher education. And this is a complicated bill, and I know there are a lot of issues that remain to be worked out with the bill. I had a good meeting with the office of MinSCU, and also some good conversations with the publishers, and we need to continue to work on the language. My motion is to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Higher Education Bill, with the understanding that there's considerable work that needs to happen on the language.
Okay, and you have a delete all amendments.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And at this time, I don't want to amend the bill at all, because these amendments reflect only the input of MinSCU and not of the publishers and not of the blind constituents who brought the bill forward.
So we are not going to move the DE1 amendment.
That's correct.
Member, cases, you don't have to pass it out, I guess, since we're not going to move it. In fact, do you want these saved in case, or are you going to be amending the delete all?
Mr. Chair, I have a feeling the next delete all will be substantially different from this, so they could be recycled.
Well, we'll just recycle these, and you... Gentlemen, don't have to pass it off. Go ahead. And do you have testifiers?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I just want to make clear the reason why I'm introducing this bill, even though this obligation already exists to provide accessible materials. When you write a letter to somebody and you ask them to comply with an existing law, unless the law is very clear and explicit, sometimes you have difficulty in getting people to comply with the law. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll let my first testifier introduce herself to the committee and provide some testimony.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the Higher Education Committee. My name is Jennifer Dunham. I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. We're a consumer organization of blind and interested sighted people who are working to improve opportunities for the blind. I'm speaking today in support of this bill because we believe that Minnesota should join the 10 other states that have enacted similar legislation to this, which requires publishers to assist in making instructional material accessible to students who are in higher education. Currently, institutions and services such as our Communication Center at Minnesota State Services for the Blind, as well as institutions of higher education, are bearing the burden of making instructional materials accessible, often at considerable taxpayer expense. The institutions recognize that they have a legal obligation to make the materials accessible, but existing law does not prescribe how that is to be done. So the burden of doing this would be significantly lighter with assistance from publishers to provide the materials. Without assistance from publishers right now, what happens is that it takes significant amounts of time and effort and cost to get even to the point of having a source file that can be made into the alternate format of a student's choice. And again, most of this is done at significant taxpayer expense. With the changing methods of publishing these days and with the new technology that's becoming available, publishers can easily provide files that can then be used by institutions of higher education, organizations, or even directly by students to have access and make the process of access go faster. This legislation requires the publishers to provide the electronic versions that can be used to make the material accessible. and that provides processes for ways to go about doing that. Because of the existing laws in other states, some publishers have processes in place that are already doing this and make it possible now, but not all publishers, and certainly the results vary around our state for the students that are dealing with this with different higher education institutions and with different publishers. There are processes outlined in the legislation that protect the rights of the publishers, both in terms of their income from the sales of the material as well as from copyright infringement. There are provisions in existing copyright law that provide for the conversion of materials into alternate formats now, and so this works with those provisions. So basically we are asking your support for this legislation that will provide a more consistency around our state for students who are needing effective access to higher education, provide a higher quality experience with timely access. It helps the institutions meet their obligations, and it protects the rights of the publishers. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dunham. Sir, you want to just identify yourself?
Hi, my name is Jeff Thompson. I'm the former president of the Minnesota Association of Blind Students, and I've attended MCTC and the University of Minnesota, so I've experienced some difficulty in having sufficient or effective access to textbooks. One of the main things is the timing of getting your books so you're prepared for class to, you know, level the playing field. If it's available to other people, it should be available to everyone, including access in a format that I can use or others to use. I spent a lot of time scanning books, doing lots of extra hours gaining access to the books. I just wonder if we could have this bill passed, that if other students and non-physical students like myself would have more time for other things rather than spending 2 extra hours or 3 extra hours every time we're doing homework, which could have been time spent with their families and stuff. So I support this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson and Ms. Dunham. We will definitely try to help out. And as you said, Ms. Dunham, with all the technology we have nowadays, you know, we have, I'm sure you know, Representative, but we have a blind representative here in the House of Representatives, Representative Westrum, and I noticed that he's able to get our bills and that somehow immediately on his computer and capable of reading them. So there's evidently, if we can afford the hardware, software, whateverware, I'm technologically illiterate, as I've mentioned many times in the past, but if we can afford that, there's got to be a way for the higher education, particularly the Office of Higher Education, working with the publishers to provide that for you. So we'll work on that. Representative Detmer, and then we got to get out of here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and testifiers. Do the educational institutions, do they have prior, how much notice do they have prior to a student coming in to the facility that needs the this type of format, instructional materials?
Who wants to take that, answer that one?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman of the City. My name is Elizabeth Dell, and I promise you I will be very brief. I am the head of counsel for Pearson Education, which is what they tell me, one of the largest educational publishers in the world. One of every three textbooks is a Pearson textbook. I'm not here to advertise for Pearson. In fact, quite the opposite. I've traveled here to Minnesota from New York, where, as many of you probably know, we now have our first blind governor, okay, in the state of New York. So that will be quite a, and he, that's what I understand, he's a very strong advocate for persons that, with blindness and low vision. I'm coming here today to tell you that the publishing industry opposes this bill, and not because we oppose access, we certainly don't, but because we have been doing this for a number of years. Okay, for example, Pearson alone distributes about 10,000 files every year to students with disabilities throughout the country. Most of these students do not live in states where there are laws. I believe there are more than 10 states now that do have laws. However, on the books, Minnesota's law is really the most extreme, as it is certainly proposed here.
Well, ma'am, we do have to leave this room. We're 15 minutes over. But I can tell you that Representative Hartman said at the beginning that she was willing to work with you and others to modify this, and she, in fact, withdrew her Alito Amendment, as you heard her do. And so you folks can work this out. We're accustomed to working things out with publishers because in this state, because sometimes they don't seem to be very cooperative to us. So,
well, I'd like to go on the record as expressing our cooperation, certainly Pearson, okay, and the publishing industry.
We appreciate that, and members of the committee, before this moves on, Representative Hartman will try to work out a compromise that's acceptable to everyone. Ma'am, I'm sorry we couldn't afford you more time, and Ms. Dunham and Mr. Thompson, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Tuesday during the day and Tuesday during the evening we are meeting. Members, meeting adjourned. Have a nice weekend. Representative Hartman renews her motion that House File 3752 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment stopped.